Acts chapter 2 and verse 14. But Peter, standing up with the 11, lifted up his voice and said unto them, Ye men of Judah, and all ye that dwell in Jerusalem, be this known unto you, and hearken to my words. Now slip over to Philippians, please. Philippians chapter 1. Verse number 12. But I would you should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. Now further down, verse 17, verse maybe 16, the one preach Christ of contention, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my bonds, but the other of love, knowing that I am set for the defense of the gospel. Now look further down to verse 27. Only let your conversation be as becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that ye stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and in nothing terrified by your adversaries, which is to them an evident token of perdition, but to you of salvation, and that of God. Now simply slip on to 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. These are well-known verses. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse number 7. So that ye were in samples to all that believe in Macedonia and Achaia. For from you sounded out the word of the Lord, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place. Your faith to Godward is spread abroad, so that we need not to speak anything. That will be sufficient for reading. Whenever sometimes we're asked for ministry meetings, we'd be tempted, as you would know, to take up something that nobody else has ever thought of and try and give the saints something that will enrich their minds and make them really happy on the way to heaven. Now, that's good. We don't want to despise that. But I have felt this time, I know it will be disappointing, but at the same time, I hope it will not be too much, that there are some special needs that have arisen in these latter years in the work of God. And we need to have our minds wakened up just to take a look at things and see them as they really are. And tonight we're going to take a look at what I judge to be a fairly serious problem in the north of Ireland, and that is the gathering of people under the sound of the gospel. An assembly with a gospel exercise. Now you know that Northern Ireland was famed for years as being a wonderful place where, in fact, they thought we knew nothing, only the gospel. We're that stupid. They didn't even think we knew the Bible at all. And the only thing you'd get in Northern Ireland would be a gospel preacher. And that's about all you'd get over there. That's the way the Scotchmen looked at us, and Englishmen thought we were way behind. In everything else, we knew nothing, only the gospel. It's a pity we would lose that reputation. It'd be a great mercy that we would still be energetic in the gospel. Now, you maybe don't know, but you better be wise. The danger over the course of years is that we lose interest in that wonderful exercise. If you were in other lands, even with only go across to Scotland, they lost for a good while. I'm not saying they have lost it at the moment, for they're trying to recover it. But for years they lost all zeal in the gospel. And the only thing they thought of was ministry. That's the only thing they thought of. Get us ministry. We don't want to sit and listen to the gospel. With the result that many of the assemblies are dying out, and they're becoming weak. If you were in New Zealand, I was there. I was very much annoyed at them. Maybe I was a wee bit outspoken, as you know, I couldn't help it. I even quoted them those words, and many of them felt it. Not a man to be seen, not a voice to be heard, and preaching has stopped as if nobody cared. Mind you, they took a look at me, but it was true. They hadn't one full-time worker in those two islands. There's not one full-time worker. There's not a Christian 40 years in the assembly that has ever sat in a series of gospel meetings. That's worth thinking about. Those that would be 50 years or so saved could remember the old times when they had gospel efforts. But that's a thing of the past. Now, there'll be always the grave danger. I'm not saying it's imminent, but there'll be the grave danger that we in Northern Ireland would just get into the same rut as other countries. And we'd fail to learn our lessons and learn them in time. Because remember, whether you like it or not, the gospel is the lifeline of the assembly. It's really the life of the assembly. Because if you're not seeing souls saved and added to the company, you're wise enough to know that a few, like the rest of us, will be going home to glory soon. And one after another is taken home to glory. And the seats are left empty. And if they're not being filled, you always know what exactly will result. Now, these are serious matters. Now, one of the weaknesses that you folk in Belfast had, you didn't notice it, you never took any heed to it. But for many years, you were building up the assemblies by those who came from country areas and to work in Belfast and came to live in Belfast. And quite a number were added to the assemblies in Belfast that weren't saved in Belfast, but were saved in the country districts where they came from. A brother wakened me up, you know, to this one day. He says, I was 30 years in a certain assembly in the north of in Belfast here. And I was 3 years in the assembly, sorry. I was 3 years in the assembly. And he says, I noticed that they received 30 people in the 3 years. And then he says, I took another look at them, and there was three of them saved in their own district. Now, can you follow that? Now, that would be letting them see they were growing, but they weren't growing the way they ought to have been growing. It was growing at other people's expense. Now, I know there are quite a number. Now, I'm being wise. I'm not unkind. Quite a number came to live in Belfast who weren't saved. And in the mercy of God, they didn't get saved in the city. So we're praising God for that. Don't be thinking we're just thinking everybody had to get saved in the country, that there was no salvation in the city. But we do want you to think now, think it seriously over, that if we are not really as we ought to be in the gospel, as we should be, the assembly is bound to go down. Now that's solid. Oh, you say, but the troubles did us a lot of harm. And then the young couples, you see, one of the troubles you'd have if you're in Vancouver, I can always talk about other places, and I'm not, it doesn't give you any offense here, is that houses are so dear in the city of Vancouver that the young people have to go to the country to get a home. And that's why the men of them scatter out from the assemblies. And if a young couple's looking at a house there in the Malone Road, some of you people would need to put your hand in their pocket to help them to buy it at the present time. You all know that. I don't need to exaggerate that. It's perfectly true. It's impossible for young couples to get a home in many of the areas where it's so expensive. Now, these are things we've got to face facts. We've got to face facts. Now, the first thing that I really want to get round to now, because I'm not here to give you a scolding. As you can see, I haven't scolded so far. But I would like to think of the possibility of just becoming discouraged. It makes us real. You see, I'm not talking away of outside my own experience. Very easy just to get so disheartened that you feel it's hardly worth anything. Hardly worth trying. You know, I've known something of this in my early days, and I can sympathize with you. I know exactly what it means. When you go to meetings and nobody turns up and you have difficulties and one thing or another, some of you don't know what way I was brought up, but those experiences taught me lessons, and I hope I'll be able to pass them on to you. And you say, well, what are we going to do? Now, the one thing that will fill a hole, I'm not saying it'll fill Craig's, isn't it? What will really make all the difference in meetings, and it's my own self now as well as you, and that is where you have the power and presence of God. It's a magnet that will draw people together. Now, I know that when you go to the New Testament, there will be very ways. There are miraculous happenings. For instance, now you men know when you preach John 3, I'm sure you will show me how to do it. You know you preach John 3, haven't you? What brought Nicodemus to Jesus? It heard about the miracles. It heard about the power of God being operating. And that brought him. And I know that we don't see the miraculous doings of God. Now, yet, we're not looking for some spectacular thing. But the one thing that would make a gospel meeting distinct from every other meeting that people attend, if they come into the gospel meeting and they feel that God is coming near. Now, brethren, we'll be dealing with the prayer meeting and we'll see how that has a reaction to that. We can't carry on with our God. You see, one of the amazing things, now I want you people to think, because I'm not doing you any harm. You go to meetings and you listen to preaching where people are getting saved. But see, you know that preaching's not any better than what we've heard in our own hall. There's nothing wonderful about it. In fact, well, maybe they could preach better, some of the boys that we've listened to. And yet there are people getting saved. You can't deny it now. And what is that? It's God, His presence and His power amongst us. It would be a pity if anything in our lives would hinder that. If any slackness on our part would bring about a reduction of the power of God amongst us. If meetings haven't the power of God in them and the power of God in them, it won't matter how nicely it's expressed or how well it's worded. Now, I like it well worded. You know I don't preach a through other gospel, as you would call it that, whatever word you like to use. And we believe in putting out scripture statements from the platform. And yet we must admit that God used in our own land here men who were very limited in their ability and very limited in their, we might say, their accuracy and so on. We don't want to be critical of them. But they really did see God's hand. Now, it was simply because God was with them. Dear brethren, if we can get God with us, it will help us to see the place getting livened up, and it will help us to see the power of God will bring the people. There's no doubt about that. You see, when God's at work, the minds of people are bound to be upset and bound to be alarmed, or at least awakened to some extent. But then says somebody, but you, man, dear, you're really stupid. How are we going to know? How are we going to know? Well, now, in nearly all gospel meetings, there's some sinner will slip in. And occasionally a stranger will come. Now, they don't come often. I know that. We're all far too practical to talk nonsense. They don't come often. But if the night they do come, God speaks to them. And God's presence is there. It's likely they'll come back again. At least it'll leave an everlasting impression upon their minds. Now, these are big things, and I hope we'll be wise, really wise, in thinking them over. Now, you know right well, without me being hard with you, I'm not hard at all, that if you were having a series of meetings here, first thing you think of doing, we'll get a thousand charge printed. And we'll have a few gospel tracts, and we'll go round to those, and we'll tell the people about the meetings. Now, that used to work well. Maybe I might charge you 80, but you mightn't even get 10 out of the 1,000. Maybe you don't believe me, you're telling me I'm talking nonsense. You don't get the attention that you should. You go to the door. There have been 20 others at the same door with some other sorts of leaflets, and yours is just among the many. And they just say, thank you, sir, and that's about all the length it gets. Now, you know that. The time was, you see, that a simple invitation was all that was needed. And you got people to come to meetings just because you invited them by the gospel tract. They never saw their face and you didn't know them. And they didn't know you. Now, these are things that we have to face in reality. But I'm coming to the conclusion. Now, this is only my personal think. I might be wrong. Now, you see, somebody, if you were having meetings, would you not invite the people? Oh, sure. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not against it. Don't think. But I'm beginning to see that it's not as effective as it once was. It's not. You might as well admit it, because I know. I could tell you places where I went round the doors, and house after house after house, and you would wonder, would you ever see any of them under the sound of the gospel at all? Now then, the next thing that I want us to get round to is this. That if you're going to have God's help in the gospel, you need a united thing. Now, some of God's people would be inclined to drop out and let the thing alone. They would come if they have no place else to go. Or they would come on the usual nights that they attend, and the rest of the nights they stay at home. And if they have anything planned, or anything thought of that was going to upset or going to the meetings. Well, you know, I couldn't go because I had planned to go such and such a place. And I went to visit so-and-so, and I wanted a wee holiday. You know, a wee break's a great thing in these days. You need to get a wee break. And I didn't want to miss my holiday. And I this, that, and the other. Now, you know all these things. Nearly any excuse is enough for some people. But I just read that verse in Acts, because we want to keep to the Bible if we can. I just read that verse in the Acts chapter two, and I was pointing out, you see, that Peter stood up with the 11. Sure, dear brother, you've noticed that Thomas didn't miss that meeting. He had missed another one, but he didn't miss that one. Wonder could we say now that we had the whole lot. I know assemblies where you'd hardly ever get any, that's physically fit. Now we know that many of us are getting on and we're frail and we're not as able as we'd like to be. But as long as you're physically fit, stand in with the gospel. Now this boycotting of meetings has become a great goal in the north of Ireland. And that's not of God. And boycotting the gospel is not of God. And remember that. It's God would want a united company, a soul-hearted assembly in an effort that is for the glory of God and for the making known of the message. Then, another thing that we should think of. God works in a wonderful way. Always keep your eye open for what God's doing. Because remember, anything that we'll ever do, we're only doing what God is already working at, and we're the instruments that he may use. And one of the things that a believer needs to notice is God operating. And God changing people. It'll amaze some of you to know that there are people on the way to heaven, and those who knew them for years never thought that such a blessing would be theirs. This is that man. They never get saved. I know right well, not as the most of Craigie State Assembly had been standing watching Stephen been stoned by Paul. I mean, he wasn't lifting the stones, but he was in the crowd that was doing it. And he was ringleader. He says, there's a boy I'll never get saved. That boy's a real bitter enemy. And yet God, now listen, let us get a hold of the greatness of the Almighty. He can change people. Some of us have seen people change that we never dreamt of. I can tell you story after story of those whom God saved that everybody felt were so fierce and so wild that nobody ever thought to be jealous. Never lose hope of people. Never lose hope of people. But what I'm trying to get around to just at the moment is we should be looking for opportunities. Now, sometimes, now listen very carefully. I know it's simple, but it's very precious. God will bring certain people into certain circumstances, and you know about them. And you're maybe the only Christian that knows about those people in those trials that they're in. And it's nice when you can go along and have a wee word with them. They're strangers to the gospel. But there's one thing that you can impress them with when their Christianity gives you a feeling for others. And they'd say, well, now, there's one thing about him anyhow. He knew me when I was in the difficulties. Now, I don't say everybody appreciates that, but there always an opportunity comes when God is nothing. You know, I work with people, I don't talk too much about myself, but my wife has always told me, whatever you do, don't start to talk about yourself. That's an age, men in old age are all talking about themselves, you know. So I don't want to talk about myself. But I work with men. And I preach to them as best I could, as you know. I saw about half a dozen unsaved that I work with, so I'm nothing to be ashamed of. But I don't see them all reached. But I went to see a workmate that was maybe the most opposed. His sister was saved, but he was, oh no, he just was a hard case. He wasn't bad for me now, don't be thinking that, but he was no suffering. I went to see him in the hospital. Now you listen to me. You see a man as hard as steel, and the tears running down his eyes. Telling me. So he always knew that you were genuine. Always knew that you were a Christian. And his wife told me that he got saved before he died. I hope he did. Now you, these are big things, dear. The hardest man in Belfast. Don't you be afraid of him. You can cry to God. And God can change and bring the circumstances. The main thing I'm emphasizing just at the moment is you being wise enough just to see the opportunity and to see the workings of God and to, as it were, fit into the occasion and take advantage of an opportunity that may never come round again. so that you may get his heart reached by the glorious message of the gospel. Then again, you see, the next thing that I want to think is this, that we have a great difficulty in the north of Ireland. Now, we have. I know you don't like me talking like this, but bear with me. This is staying sort of a meeting. You've never been one like this before, I'm sure. And you say, well, never been another. Well, if you come these next, you'll be in worse than me. So you'll have to bear with me. Anyhow, I want you to get a hold of this now. Please get a hold of this. That there is always the grave danger that we turn separation into isolation. Now, I'm giving you time to think that over. Now, I believe in separation. You know too well that that's why I'm not invited to a whole lot of places to say that fellow thinks of nothing else. Well, I believe in separation. I believe in the distinction of the assembly and the clear line of demarcation. We don't cut that down at all. But at the same time, remember our blessed Lord was a friend of publicans and sinners. And remember that he mixed with the people. And remember that the apostles and others were quite prepared to be in touch with the people. There's a danger of assembly people being, oh, well, we're going to heaven there, but... It's not that we say it now. Don't misunderstand me. But the people have the impression, well, them boys wouldn't look at you. They wouldn't look at you. They don't want to see us. They treat us like dirt. Now, because we don't go in with their affairs and go in with their big shows and so on, and we don't go in with their social life and anything like that. But at the same time, I do feel ashamed myself in this regard, that we just don't get in touch with the people as closely as we should. Now, everybody knows somebody. You either work with them, or you live beside them, or you contact them in business. You have always some kind of contacts. Every one of us now, without exception. We don't live in a wee icebox, as it were, all by ourselves. Not at all. If you're at school, you'd have the schoolboys. It was a great opportunity when I was at school to talk to the boys about salvation. If you're in a firm working, well, you can get in touch with the different workers and you can speak to the different ones about eternal matters. And keep friendly with them at the same time, but always get a wee word in. Get a word in. Always getting a word in. And you say, well, I don't think you should waste the master's time. No, don't do that. We're not pushing that. There's always opportunities. Lunchtime, whatever time you call it, there's always an opportunity if you take advantage of it. And just in your own simple way, bring the gospel to people's minds. Not so much asking them to meetings, but give them an appetite that they'll want to come to meetings to hear how to get it. Get into them what could be theirs. And then tell them where they hear more about it if they want to hear. But you'll find, you notice the way I work that. Quite often we invite people to meetings we don't hardly what we want them for. They don't. Oh, you say, but we tell them, we know it. You know it all right, but maybe they don't. They don't. That becoming intimate and friendly toward people is important. Now, that doesn't mean you make chums of them. Now, it doesn't mean that you run with their associations. It doesn't mean any of those things at all, but it does mean this, that you're just, as it were, able to speak to them in a friendly way, and they can speak to you, because you've been habitually doing that. And when you introduce the gospel to them, you're not bringing someone to them that, as it were, is foreign, it would be resented or anything like that. Because quite a number of them will say, well, you know, I don't like those dippers, and I wouldn't want anybody, as long as the meeting were near the dippers, I hit them. But at the same time, you know, you can't deny the fact that he's a brave fella, and he and I, we get on reasonably well together. Now, these are things, I'm speaking very humbly, you know what I am. I'm doing it for your good. Learning the art of getting contacts and making good use of them. Now, learning the art of it. Not easy. You'll find you'll need to do some serious thought. Because you see, you can't go in with her wrong. Now, don't forget that. You can't go in. I didn't even go to their sports and all in school. And you had to be very careful to keep clear of everything that was wrong. But don't let our separation mean that we have no contact with the unsaved. That they hardly know we're living. Now, I was in America. I'm not going to tell you where, because you'd maybe tell the people, and I don't want them to hear anything that I say behind their back. And I just couldn't help but think, now listen to it, brother. Lovely hall, well accommodated, a bedroom at the back for the preacher to sleep in if he was needing lodgings, and a kitchen that you could entertain, and they could entertain and do anything. Nothing, no problem with that. Most who were coming to that meeting were 16 or 20 miles from it. And do you know what I couldn't help but think? Those people living in the houses beside the hall, they hardly knew what they were there for. They hardly knew a thing about them. They say there's a sort of an odd crowd mix over there. I don't know, they come on a Sunday morning and they come in their cars and they lock up their car and they go home, they're 20 miles and they're 20 miles away, and they knew nothing at all about them. There's no context for the public beside them. That's a big loss. And this is a difficult thing. You know what I couldn't help but think? That one of the best ways of getting unsaved to meetings is unsaved, bringing on faith. Boss, if somebody's getting far-fetched now, he's losing his head. No, I'm not. The best gospel meeting in your New Testament, now listen to it, was gathered by an unsaved man. And everybody got saved at it. Give me time to think that, for there's big statements. Did you get that? The best gospel meeting in the New Testament, Acts chapter 10. And the man who gathered the company was Cornelius, himself looking for light and salvation. And you know, it used to be one of the things that unsaved people would do, pulling one another together and saying, come on, boys, come on, girls, come on, I've heard the gospel, you come with me, you come with me. And that certainly did help numbers to swell in days gone past. I'm not saying it works so handy now, but it's great when unsaved people can bring unsaved people to meetings. And that, of course, is very important. Then again, the next thing that I want to speak about is this. We ought to be reasonably careful. Now, you're not like me for this, but don't be too hard on me. We ought to be reasonably careful who we put on the platform. One failing gospel meeting could do more harm than 10 good ones. Now, these are solemn things. The temptation with assemblies has been for some time now just to put men on the platform because of their assembly principles and because they stand for the right thing. That's the man we have. But a man could be a good man, and don't misunderstand me, and stand for assembly principles, and yet not a gifted gospel preacher. Now, we need to be careful about that. And we're not saying you should change from that and put anybody on the platform. But the one thing you should nearly do your utmost to be sure of. Now, be sure of. And that is that when we put somebody on the platform, if a stranger happens to be there, it'll not be a disgrace to us. Now, you don't know me, need me to tell you that many a meeting you've sat in, and if you had a non-saved person with you, have been a shield. You'd rather you hadn't been there. And many a time, now you men know what I'm talking about, and you women too. When you're listening to the gospel, you're nearly listening for the person beside you, especially if you've brought somebody along. Aren't you now? And she says, you know, I wonder how that will do with so-and-so. And you get men coming off with silly things from gospel platforms and saying things that have nothing to do with the gospel and don't at all help the meetings. Now, these are things that we need to be careful about, and we need to be cautious that God has fitted men to tell the gospel, and we should encourage them to do it. Now, I know the way men jump up and say to me, I'm quite aware of the difficulties. Well, then how are we going to learn to preach the gospel? If according to you, only the experts should be at it. I didn't say that. The way I learned it, and he says, you never learned it yet, but no matter, I tried to learn it. I thought I could learn to preach. And I wasn't trying to learn to preach, but I didn't want to be a preacher. I didn't want to go out to the work at all. That's one of the things that I didn't want to do. You can even tell anybody that I was pushing to get out, for I didn't want to go. I took the Lord to deal with me to get over that. But what I do want to say is this, that I just have opened a meeting for somebody. You know, you'd hardly ask a young man now to open a meeting for you, take the whole thing. I'm telling you not. We've reached the stage now, if you put any young fellow on the platform now, there's one man was asked to give his testimony, he sat down in 5 minutes till the time was up, and the preacher that was with him had to give, he just give out a hymn and close in prayer. Mr. Gilmer, he was preaching, so somebody opened a meeting for him. And he said, Mr. Gilmer, will now give you his address. And he says, my address is Grace Hill Banger. And he closed the meeting in prayer, because he left him no time. It's a sad day, Whipreach, when you could hardly ask a young brother to open a meeting for you. He wouldn't know when to sit down. He wouldn't. Because, you know, they're talking machines, nearly. Wee bit of education. The older generation, the one thing about them, they weren't that well educated, and therefore their sentences were shorter, and their grammar was short, and they just had to give a few words and sit down. And some of us didn't preach long. I remember well the first sermon I preached. I said, somebody, you remember the first one, yes? And I remember the first gospel meeting I preached outside of Roan Hall. And I could tell you what I preached there, too. So somebody, you have a powerful memory. No, I have not. That's just, you know, when you're preaching for the first time or so, it's certainly humiliating, isn't it? Maybe it's not some. But you see, the danger is that we think a bit of education and a wee bit of fluency, we think we can just preach in the gospel. And we just rattle on. And we hardly know how to control ourselves and how to control our time. Now, these are things that we need to think about. It's lovely to see young men coming on. And then you see, now listen to your souls. There'll be men never will be preachers. And there's no use of time to try to make preachers out of them, for you can't do it. God never intended them. They've other work to do. But they never were intended to be on the gospel platform. They never were meant for it. And as the late Mr. Gould would have said it, and of course, I don't need to tell you how anyone here remembers him. I suppose only myself. I don't know whether any of you older men remember him or not. But he would listen to a man. He'd say, isn't he handy? Isn't he handy? He meant to say he wasn't awkward on the platform. Some people are a bit awkward when they go to preach. They hardly know what way to get at it or what to do. So somebody, I don't hope you don't come to any meetings I have. Some people tell me, I hate to see you coming in when I'm preaching, for you annoy me. I don't annoy you because I listen very thoughtfully. I'm a bit glad to hear them. So don't be thinking that I'm a critic. But at the same time, we should be careful now, brother. And we should be careful, brethren, that we put on the platform those that will adorn the doctrine of God our Savior. I think that's fairly clear. Then again, you will notice that the point that I think we need to stress is that when it come to the Thessalonian church and it came to the Philippine church, there was a great deal of thought in Paul's mind that it was a great center for the gospel to spread. He says, from you sounded out the word of truth. That lovely. Lovely. I know you get the children here, you do your best. Now, we're not scolding you. And I know there's, look, you don't need to go far. You needn't cross the ocean or the further lands explore. You can find the heathen near. You can meet them at your door. I'd be surprised if there's not a few heathen living near Craigie Street, am I right? I would be surprised if you went down round those homes that you wouldn't meet a few heathen. And I hope we know how to treat them and to realize they're limited. And they don't know. Some of them never saw a Bible. Don't you despair. God can reach them. Some of them never went to Sunday school. They wouldn't know what you're talking about. Some of them have no time for religion. They'll tell you, look, I'm going to think of God and eternity. They'll do all that sort of thing. Don't get a bit distressed. Don't be distressed. God can reach them. Always remember that. I listened to a conversion story. I know it would maybe be out of line. He's a man, I don't mention his name for some of you know him. He doesn't live near here, so he named the thing around the city. He was a policeman. And there's an old man that I knew very well, had a love for souls. Perhaps very few men like him that saw so many saved. He had the joy of seeing, you know, our brother Davidson was preaching his father saved, where he was driving him home in a taxi. The way he reached him was by hiring the taxi. And then he had to stay for the gospel meetings when he went the distance. And then he couldn't sit outside in the cold, so he had to come into the gospel. You see, he was using a wee bit of influence. And then he preached to him the whole road home. And he got saved going around the bend. So see how I got the car around the bend. I never knew. I thought the time might have hit the ditch for so occupied in getting saved. He got saved. No doubt about that. So you see, you can always see cases like that. Very unusual cases. People reach that nobody would think of seeing and delivered. But what we do want us now to get round to for a minute now, and we don't want to be weighing you with it, and that is learning how to treat people when they do come to gospel meetings. Now, if a stranger comes in, don't be afraid to shift over in your seat a wee bit and have him sit down. Some Christians and I may not seat, look, say, if the king, queen come in, I wouldn't move for the queen, not at me. And if they don't let me in that seat, I'm not here at all. Don't be stiff like that, brother. Don't be silly. After all, we should be so thankful to see them that we'd sit on the floor. And you don't need to do that, but you'd sit on the floor to oblige them. It grieves me if you're on the platform the way I be, and you see a Christian sitting at the end there, and another sitting there, and people, you know, the strangers don't like to crush past you, and they're coming away up into the front where there's plenty of seats lying idle, and the Christians wouldn't know to sit over and let them sit there. A wee bit thoughtful, brother. A wee bit distressed about that. I could take you to brethren, and they never settle anything but the end seat, and they never will. And if we don't get an end seat, we don't want one at all. That to me is silly. Anyhow, I'm making the ways myself, so you may bear with it. But what I do want you to know is, now I'm going to tell you a wee story, because my wee stories are very effective. And it'll be a good one for Craigie Street. In a minute, learn how to treat people when they do appear. Don't be scrutinizing them and asking them a whole lot of questions. Where do you come from? And have you any connections with meeting? Don't be worrying them that way. People want to come in and they don't want you to be interfering with them. Quite a number of unsaved have been upset because Christians couldn't let them alone. They'd have to find out, where do you come from and who any connections and all that sort of stuff. Don't you worry about that. They're all right. Let them alone. They get saved, you hear all about them. And a wee bit of courtesy is very precious. I called at a house in Belfast. Now, don't be asking me where it is, because I get into trouble for talking like this. And the lady said to me, I says, where do you... I think she maybe professed at meetings I've had. Away here, miles and miles from here. But she came down here to live in Belfast. And she says, I was... society and I've got to go to the gospel meetings. No, she says, I haven't been going to the gospel meetings lately. She says, I lived over in the Craigie Street Way. And I went to the gospel hall. And she says, they made me feel very welcome and they made me feel at home. And I was always pleased to go there. You're not putting me out of Craigie Street for saying that. But she says, I've come over to this other end of Belfast. But she says, I felt a coolness. I didn't have it. It was just something different. They didn't make me feel as if I was welcome. Now, brethren, never let that be said of you here now. I haven't said anything bad about you now in Craigie Street. Sure, I didn't. You noticed that. This woman was praising the way that they welcomed her in Craigie Street coming in. These are not fairy tales I'm telling you. These are literal facts. She says they always made you feel you were welcome and they were glad to see you. But she says, I went to this other place. Go without asking where it is now. Because you'd be across from me, you live across from me if I talked to that about them. And she says, now, they were all right, she says, but they never seemed to, there was no warmth with it. She says, you couldn't feel at home in the place. And she says, I didn't go back. Now that to me would be a serious weakness. Now, I don't think it's here. Now, you see, I didn't say it was here. But watch that. Many people are easily impressed. You don't know how people's minds work. You see, this is the thing that we sometimes forget. Because people may be coming into a gospel hall for the first time. They don't know what to expect. They don't. They've never been in such a place before. And they look around them and they wonder what will happen and what way they'll take us or where should we sit or something like that. Or maybe they think they put you in some wee corner and be yourself or something like that. Let them feel that we're glad to see them and they're living sit comfortably and they feel at home. Well, you say that's very hippie stuff you're giving us tonight. No, it's not. These are realities, brethren. These are realities. Now I want to get down to one more point and then we close. And that is the great burden that should fill our hearts for the loss that's around us. And it's very sad, dear souls, to think that those neighbours of yours and mine, those workmates that you go and work with, that they'll burn in hell forever if they die unsaved. you tell them with a tear in your eye and with a feeling in your breast that you're burdened about their soul, it could have some effect. No officialism. But mind you, human beings are in need. You go up that street there, I don't know. You go down these other streets in behind here, and you'll knock many a door, and there'll not be a breath of salvation about them. They won't know what you're talking about, even though they've been reared just beside the hall. These are waiting mothers. Waiting for us who preach a wee bit. My preaching days are all but over, as you know. And I'm talking to you now in a very serious way. And you will have to agree with me, won't you now, that I have a special appreciation of a burdened believer. Because the night I got saved, I was at a prayer meeting, and it was the anxiety of their prayers that wakened me up. When I saw the concern that they had, I got burdened about my soul. Now I want you to think about these things. You might say this is a strange meeting. I wonder, will it make any difference in this locality? We'll all soon be gone now. You know that. And the generation round about us will soon all be gone. We have the message. We have the remedy. And we can see the need. We hope we feel it. And admit our weakness. Admit our failure. And maybe the Lord will even yet start to turn in one after another. People you never thought of. Moved by God to come to hear the gospel. And touched by the Almighty when they do hear it. That's what we ought to aim at. May the Lord burden our hearts, brethren. I don't want to be unkind. But we're coming to near the end of the age, as you know. And the Lord's coming is near at hand. And if we're going to see a few gathered in, we'll need to be in earnest about it and have the help of God and the power of the Holy Spirit to see the people awakened. And even in our private life, now don't forget you need the help of the Spirit of God to speak to people privately. As much as you need the Spirit of God to help you on the platform. Will you remember that? We can't do either without divine aid. May the Lord help us for his name's sake. Shall we pray?